So for weak equivalences, you want to formally invert a bunch of equivalences. And it's just essentially two classes of things. All maps of that form where they're induced by a generating set of F local trivial coquadrations. Applying some simplicial precedence. In other words, you want to take all the trivial coquadrations and then make some more invertible. Okay? And that's what's going on here. So F just stands for whatever map you wanted to make invertible. If you had a family of them, you just collect the family together and that could be a single F. Okay, and you want to also invert, formally invert, cofibrant replacement of all maps of this form. Remember we had our sphere spectrum, which was S naught in degrees, zero in all of its T suspensions. And there's a canonical map from the suspension spectrum associated to T, shift it up one times into the sphere spectrum, and then you shift all of those as many times as you like. And you want all these to be formally invertible as well. And then you start up the localization machine. You have this collection of injective objects. An object's injective has the right lifting property with respect to all of these. And say that a map of T spectra is now a stable equivalence. If and only if in some underlying strict category, which I'm not specifying, you're seeing an isomorphism in morphisms in that homotopy category. Morphisms in the strict category, in the strict homotopy category. This is for all injective at Z. Okay. This is what the localization machinery is telling you to do. Those are the weak equivalences. I've written down the cofibrations. Fibrations are defined by a lifting property. In the usual way. And with these definitions, you get a left proper simplicial model structure. Okay. All right, and that's the stable model structure for T spectra in the large, localized or not. This is the most general form of it. Okay. That's cool. We've got this formal machine which produces model structures in great generality. The question is, what do they mean? Okay. And the only way you're going to be able to see meaning is if you get a better handle on what stable equivalences actually mean. And for that, you need a better description of stably fibrant objects, because part of the machinery is that a map of T spectra is a stable equivalence if and only if the associated map of injective models or stably fibrant models is a level wise equivalence. Okay. I'm still in stuff I was talking about last time, of course. And this better description of the fibrin objects only arises in specific cases, as far as I know. And for that, you need some notion of compactness. Let me just remind you what that was about. Suppose I give you a filter diagram of T spectra. Or, I don't even need to say that. This is a filter diagram of pointed simplicial precedes. And I'm going to assume that these guys are globally fibrant. In other words, they're fibrant for the underlying model structure on pointed simplicial precedes. Certainly, there's canonical maps from each of the objects in the diagram into the filtered colimit. This guy may fail to be globally fibrant, so we take a globally fibrant model, and at the same time, all these maps induce maps from so-called T-loops. Of these pointed objects, where T loops of something is this internal function complex of maps from T into Y. That's a pointed simplicial precedes. Okay, this is the internal function complex. Okay, so this just exists abstractly. And it certainly induces this map certainly induces a map in the filtered colimit of the diagram that you get by applying T loops to everything in sight to that guy there. And this is a comparison map I want to focus on. I say that T is compact up to equivalence. Every time you see a picture like this and you look at that comparison dot map, you see a local equivalence. In the ordinary world, the T is some finite simplicial set. That's certainly true. So all finite simplicial sets are compact up to equivalence. in fact, an observation like that is there throughout the literature going back decades. And this is sort of the normal world, okay? But if V happens to be an S scheme, okay, then V represents a pre-sheaf spectra on the category of S schemes. And if you join a disjoint base point, thinking of this object V as a simplicial pre-sheaf now, this V plus is a pointed simplicial pre-sheaf. And the point is that this guy is now compact up to equivalence. In very special situations. And one of those special situations is schemes over S with the Nisnevich topology, precisely because you have the Nisnevich descent theorem. And essentially the same argument. Tells you that all these guys are compact up to equivalence for the motivic or A1 local model structure on that same, on the simplicial pre-sheaves on the same site. Again, it's Nisnevich descent. This is why people care about that. All right, and you know, there's this general fact too, is that if T1 and T2 are compact up to equivalence, then the smash product of T1 and T2 is compact up to equivalence. And this, for example, means that if I take a smash product of a nice pointed simplicial set like S1 and a nice pointed scheme like GM, GM's pointed by the identity, this thing is compact up to equivalence. For not only the motivic model structure, but also the local model structure, the standard model structure. On some category of schemes equipped with Nisnevich topology. Right. That's where I got to last time. We needed this preamble to go further. So where am I going with this? So generally, if T is compact up to equivalence, you can, in effect, make the standard construction of a fibrant model that we know and love from infinite loop space theory. For a T spectrum. And what do? You take X, you take a level fibrant model, this is this underlying level model structure for T spectrum. Then you take the iterated loops construction on that. Okay, this is iterated T-loops, it's important, and take a level fibrant model for that, for the results. call this eta, let's call this q, and the theorem is this construction, which is natural, the map eta is a stable equivalence. In other words, it's a weak equivalence in the stable model structure. And Qx. It's stably fibrate. Now the background here is that you come into this, knowing that an object Z is stably fibrant. If and only if all objects and all levels are globally fibrant. And the adjoint bonding maps are local weak equivalences. Okay? That's what you know up front. And the question is how you make one of these in a nice, efficient way. And this is the way you do it. And the interesting bit is showing this. And that's exactly where you need this compactness assumption. I'm sorry? Yes, we are. Yeah, that's right. Pardon me? Yeah. Or bare theory of special cases, yes. I'm sorry, I can't hear.
In the construction of Q, isn't there a single infinity
P? No. This is strictly within T spectrum. X is the T spectrum, right? Let me say another word or two about this. Start with a T-spectrum Y, and there's a canonical map from Y to fake loops of Y shifted one time. You get that out of the adjoint bonding maps, and there's a mega infinity construction of the iteration of that. Okay. Like I said, the assertion that QX is stably fibrant requires the compactness assumption. Seeing that it's actually so, it's just a little bit technical because I have to, you know, write down things involving that description. Well, this is pretty broad, right?
Yeah.
T could be huge. It could be a huge pointed simplicial set. Okay? So I'm sure if you root around, you'll find an example of just an ordinary T spectrum in pointed simplicial set that it's going to fail. And the key point is that one of the few key points. But the question of whether or not this omega T preserves fiber sequences is one of the hardest things in motility homotopy theory. Right? This is what Murrell worked on for 10 years to try to get around. Okay. So showing Q of X is stably fiber is one thing. To actually prove the rest of the theorem amounts to looking at a picture like this, where this J is a natural stable fiber model that comes out of the general theory. And because LX is stably fiber, that's a level-wise equivalence. This week, have some idea of what stably fibrant objects look like. In other words, your infinite loop spaces, infinite T-loop spaces. This J here, remember, was constructed by taking pushouts of generating members of a generating family for some set of cofibrations. And you have to show that for each one of the maps that make up this composite here, the corresponding map is a stable equivalence when you apply Q, but that's essentially true because the way you stabilize is to formally invert maps that are themselves level equivalences after a certain level, okay? And so you have to make a little argument there. So that becomes a level equivalence. This is a level equivalence. That's a stable equivalence, so this has to be a stable equivalence. Okay, but there's consequences of this. Many. Many corollaries. I'm just going to list them. First of all, if T is compact, well, let's assume that T is compact up to equivalence. You know, what follows. Then the first corollary you can write down is that the stable model structure is proper. For that effectively is that this Q construction preserves fiber homotopy squares. Level fiber homotopy squares. There's a recognition principle for stable fibrations of T spectra. And it's the exact analog of what you would write down for ordinary spectra. First of all, P has to be a level fibration. And secondly, when you look at this picture involving natural stably fibrant models, this has to be a level homotopy Cartesian diagram, level or strict homotopy Cartesian diagram. The proof is essentially the same one as we used by Bosfield-Friedlander for the corresponding result for spectra. And if you stare at that proof long enough, you'll see that there's an underlying properness assumption that's required. We just, you know, claim that. So you can just do that. And now there's suspensions and loops. not too hard to see that when you take a T spectrum and smash with T on the right, that's going to preserve co-fibrations and stable equivalences. Okay? Similarly, well, that's effectively enough. Because suspension with T on the right preserves co-fibrations and stable equivalences, that's telling you you have a Quillen adjunction here. And if you think about it, the whole point of stabilizing for ordinary spectra was to take suspension with the circle and ordinary loops and show that you had a Quillen equivalence there. In other words, you know, the suspension was invertible. So the question is okay. And the answer is I don't know in general, but if I assume that T is contact depth equivalence, I can prove this. Well, I have to assume something else too. So suppose T is contact depth equivalence. Okay. Suppose also when I take the threefold smash power of T and act on it by permuting factors by a cyclic permutation. Here's the one I have on mine. Okay. Suppose this is the identity map in the underlying homotopy category point of simplicial free sheaves. So this will be F local or not, okay? Then I claim that the following is true. I can start with a T spectrum X. I can smash on the right with T, take T loops, and of course there's an adjunction map there. At the same time, I can take a stably fibrant model. Smash of X with T, apply T loops to it, and I can't claim that under these two assumptions, namely that T is contact up to equivalence and the cyclic permutation X trivially on the threefold smash power in the homotopy category, that this is a stable equivalence. Those of you that know some homotopy theory are aware that that assumption about the triviality of that cyclic permutation action is also heavily involved in showing that T-spectra equivalent to symmetric T-spectra, you know, in a suitable context. And the reason is essentially because this theorem is true. You use it elsewhere. It's a very general statement about a lot of things, right? You always need a reality check. This is where it comes from in some sense. This is a three-sphere to the three-sphere. Which takes X smash Y smash Z to Y smash Z smash X. Okay, so this permutation is acting on the smash factors in the obvious way, in the way it's supposed to. This is a degree 2 map. It's a composite of two transpositions, 3, 2, 1 is a composite of two transpositions, right? Each of which has degree minus 1. Well, degree 2 map. No, degree 0. What am I saying? Because it's a composite of... No, it's degree 2. I'm sorry. The composite of two transpositions, okay? And each of those transpositions acts like minus 1 on the 3-sphere. So the composite acts like the identity. This composite is the identity. In the point of homotopy category. Okay. Well, that's why the corresponding theorem for spectra is true. All right. Let's do another example. Yeah. Minus 1 times minus 1 is 1. Yeah, thank you. Okay. Here's the other example. Effectively, it's a lemma of Vygotsky. Here, T smash power 3 is, well, here T is the theta object, and the claim is that this assumption that the cyclic permutation acts trivially is true for this T in the motivic model structure. Okay. Let me show you a very fast proof. And it's the same very fast proof that everybody uses. Okay. First of all, T is this guy, GM as a scheme is this guy, so that T is equivalent to that, okay? The threefold smash power of T, you can just do some arithmetic, is that. Okay? You take the 3 plane, take out the 0, and collapse off by this gadget here. Of course, that isn't a very big scheme in any sense. Now, that cyclic permutation acts by acts on this guy by just permuting, you know, the factors. In this product here. So, of course, what you got is a symmetric group, some three letters acting on that quotient simplicial, or its quotient precief. And, of course, you can think of the symmetric group elements as just permutation matrices. So this extends You write it this way. To an action of the general linear group of 3x3 invertible matrices on this quotient, okay? Well, you can pick your favorite group. You could use the special linear group instead of GL3. The point is that the permutation matrices here are products of elementary transformations. Okay, so let's just write down the elementary transformation. Linear algebra now, right? Here's a perfectly good elementary transformation, okay? And if I take a parameter t and map it to the thing I get by multiplying that possibly non-trivial element by t in that particular part of the matrix, this defines scheme homomorphism from the affine line to GL3. Okay? You know, in algebraic group terms, this is telling you that the subgroup generated by the elementary transformation is a copy of the additive group. Okay? Now, you can take a bunch of these and product them together, and what you end up with, when you pick off this particular cyclic permutation, is a map from the affine line to GL3, which effectively contracts the cyclic permutation into the identity matrix by, multiplying by parameters and only generating elementary transformations. But now what's that? That composite is a homotopy, this composite. It is a homotopy from the map on A3. It's an algebraic homotopy from the map on this quotient induced by the cyclic permutation to the identity, okay? And it's pointed as well. This is a pointed homotopy. So, in the pointed motivic homotopy category, that permutation matrix certainly is acting trivially, and of course this proof is doing a lot more, right? I'm telling you that all the permutations act trivially because they're all generated by elementary transformations. And I could use more words on you. I mean, the fact that a permutation matrix is generated by elementary transformations is a consequence of the so-called Steinberg relations. And this could, you could be talking about much more general algebraic groups here, reductive algebraic group schemes. So this is a cool little proof. And it shows that the Tate object satisfies that assumption in the motivic homotopy category. Something like this has been, I should say that this has been in the air for a long time. I used an argument like that explicitly in my thesis in the early 80s. Okay, so. But I'm nice, so I'm giving it to Vygotsky. Early 80s, 1981. Okay. So that theorem there, how would you prove something like that? Well, remember I said that there's such a thing as a layer filtration, and you use a layer filtration argument. So this is a layer filtration argument. And it effectively starts with a proof of that assertion for a suspension spectrum. Okay? Okay, so K is some point of simplicial pre-sheaf. And we're taking a suspension spectrum. Now, I'll just say this. In general, you start with a T-spectrum. It has a stably fibrant model, which is level equivalent to this stabilization object, okay? This thing has free sheaves of stable homotopy groups that I'm going to describe. I'm going to describe them in global sections. So let me. These are the homotopy groups of the stable of the objects appearing in the stably fibrant model, but the pre-sheaves are homotopy groups of those things. And remember how we constructed this. In global sections, this particular homotopy group, it is a filtered colimit of things. We have homotopy classes of maps of pointed simplicial pre-sheaves from the R-sphere to the Gaian level N. Okay, this is global homotopy classes of maps. And when you construct this gadget, you see what we're starting with. That picture and effectively constructing the pre-sheaves of homotopy groups in global sections, okay? And so when you take the Rth homotopy group of this thing in global sections, it's just that, okay? And the next step up is the Rth homotopy group in global sections of this T loops, but it's right adjoint to suspension with T, and so there's a suspension operator with T from this particular set to that particular set that's induced by this bonding map. Okay? And you carry on. And I'm calling the induced maps suspension by T, and the filtered colimit is global sections, if you like, of that particular pre-sheaf of homotopy groups. It's a pre-sheaf of homotopy groups because, you know, you've got the actual circles appearing here, so these are abelian groups. Okay. I'm going to draw a picture here. For the suspension spectrum. And this is the sort of object that comes up in this filtered colimit. Then you have suspension by T, which amounts to smashing with T on the left. Let me write it this way. Okay, so this is one of the transition maps that comes up in that filtered colimit for the suspension spectrum. Now the map to P loops, if you take vibrant model, is effectively smashing with T on the right. Let me just represent it that way. There's a commutative diagram also. Okay, this is what you're doing in in global sections of the pre-sheaves of stable homotopy groups, if you like, when you're comparing this thing. Okay? Now, here we smash with T on the right. You can conjugate by a twist automorphism. That's actually an isomorphism. Okay, so what are you doing here? Taking this guy and replacing it up to isomorphism by that. Okay, so you move the T past all the other factors there, that one T. And, I've screwed up, haven't I? I wanted to do this twice. And that explains the twos that appear there. And again, there's a twist automorphism here. All right. This diagram just commutes on the nose. And the fact that this diagram commutes is a consequence of this assumption about the threefold, that cyclic permutation acting trivially on T. Because if you just check to see what's going on here, you'll see it appear. Okay? It goes away. So this commutes. At the same time, not hard at all to see that when you smash with T on the right and compose with this twist automorphism, same thing as smashing with T on the left. Same story here. And then the filtered co-limit of these systems, you see an isomorphism there just by a cofinality argument. Okay? And that effectively proves that in global sections for that particular case. And of course, it's a corollary to the theorem. So under the hypothesis that we used there, okay, the thing I just talked about, the T spectrum Y is stably fibrant. Then the canonical map from loops of T of Y to smash T to Y, that's the evaluation map in each level, This is a stable equivalence. Okay, that's effectively a corollary of what we did before. Let me just draw a picture. Okay, I'm getting an identity here. And of course, up to this point, it's brainless category theory. That's a triangle identity. Okay? But at the same time, in here, I took a stably fibrant model. And because Y is stably fibrant, I can extend epsilon over the stably fibrant model. Okay, and so there's a commutative picture like so. Now that theorem says that that composite that I just wrote down is a stable equivalence. All right, so that this thing is a stable equivalence. And what that means, finally, is that the epsilon star is a stable equivalence. Okay, and that's just by calculation involving these precious of homotopy groups. And of course, you only have those because you're making a compactness assumption. Okay, but if epsilon star is a stable equivalence, then that, of course, is a stable equivalence, and you're done. And so you actually get equivalence induced by suspension and loops. That equivalent adjunction is used in all proofs that I know that assert equivalent equivalence between T-spectra and symmetric T-spectra. Okay, so this is where those assumptions come from in that theorem. And it's saying in particular that T suspension and T loops gives you equivalent equivalence through the motivic stable category, okay, of T spectrum. Now to go further, you need a few more assumptions, or I need one more assumption. Remember the Tate object. Is that? In other words, it's a topological suspension of some point of simplicial pre-sheet. Topological suspension of a point of simplicial pre-sheet. Which in this case isn't much of a simplicial object, right? It's a constant point of simplicial object. This is of the form S1 smash K, where K is compact up to equivalence. So for the rest of what I'm going to say today, assume that this gadget T is of this form. It's a topological suspension of a gadget that's compact up to equivalence. The reason you would do that, I mean, well, it's, you know, it's the guide gives an example, comes again from the morphic stable category. But when you have T of this form, you're effectively stabilizing in two directions. First of all, in the S1 direction, then in the K direction. Okay? And because ultimately you're working with some sort of bi-spectrum objects involving S1 spectra, we'll see how this comes about. All the good properties of the ordinary stable category get inherited in this context. So, what do I mean by that? Well, let's change point of view a little bit. We're talking about an S1 smash K spectrum. You know, this is this T. And so I don't go nuts anyway. I'm going to think of this as a sequence of point and simplicial pre-sheaves. And bonding maps, which I'm going to write this way. Of course, you can flip the K around the XN with a smash, with a twist automorphism, but I'm doing this, I'm writing down the definition of the spectra this way, so I don't have to do that all the time, okay? Okay. These bonding maps induce maps the following form. You end up that smash product. This is going to be called sigma star. And of course what this is, you take your sigma, act on the left by smashing with SK minus 1, and act on the right by smashing with KR minus 1. Call it composite sigma star, and there's going to be a lot of maps like that around. Okay. And this one, smash K spectrum X determines sort of this bi-spectrum gadget. So what I'm going to say that is, it's a K-spectrum object in S1 spectra. Okay. What I would mean by such a thing, of course, is a list of S1 spectra. List of maps of spectra of that form, okay? So let me just draw a picture. We have our S1 smash K spectrum, okay? And there's an actual point of simplicial pre-sheaf in level 0. And there's a suspension spectrum associated with that. So this is the spectrum in level zero according to this construction. Okay? What do I have in level one? Well, I'm going to put that in degree zero. I'm going to put that guy in degree in level one. And so on. Then suspend up. And in level two, and then suspend up. That's the pattern. Okay. The bonding maps here, well, this is just suspension with S1 on the left, and so on, okay? The bonding map here, it's S1 smash X0 smash K to X1. Well, that's this sigma, okay? And the bonding map here is suspension with S1, and so on. Here we have sigma star, then sigma, then suspension with S1. After we get past level two. Here we have smash with K on the right. That's suspension in the K direction. Here we have an instance of sigma. Here we have an instance of sigma star, and so on. So, I mean, that's how you fill in the data to get yourself this bispectrum object. Okay. So, I'm giving you a functor from S1 smash K spectra to these K spectrum object category and spectrum category. Okay. Now some things to note about the construction. Well, you can start with a K-spectrum object in S1 spectra, and think of the picture like that. And it has an associated S1 smash K spectrum, which is effectively the diagonal. It's the diagonal of the picture. So you take the spectrum in level 0. Yes, and take the zeroth level of that spectrum in level 0. And next guy up, you take the spectrum in level 1, S1 spectrum in level 1, K level 1, and take the space in level 1 associated to that. And so on. And the bonding maps in question, well, what do you do? Let's take the K bonding map. Okay, it lends you in that space. Because that was a map of spectra, then of course there's the bonding map for this particular spectrum that lands you in level one of the spectrum. And all the bonding maps in the diagonal spectrum looks like that. Effectively what you're doing is you're taking one of these spectrum gadgets and going from here to here to here to get the bonding maps, and you repeat that pattern all the way up. If you have experience with bispectra, this is not a strange construction. Okay. So effectively, this construction, which takes S1 smash K spectrum to one of these bispectrum gadgets, this is left adjoint to the diagonal, right? there's ways of getting back and forth between S1 smash K spectrum and these bispectrum gadgets. All right. From two points of view, there's stable homotopy groups. And these are pre-shaves. They're stable. Pardon? Equivalent to what sort of categories? I don't think so. It may be an equivalent junction, you know, for suitable model structure, but I'm not going to give you a model structure for these bispectrum objects, okay? I'm going to make do without that. Okay. So an S1 smash K spectrum has bigraded pre-sheaves of stable homotopy groups. And so this is pre-sheaves. And this is a limit, filtered co-limit. I'm just going to write it down. And of morphisms in the homotopy category, like so, this is that, okay? And the way to get one of these gadgets to the other, I'm just going to drop to you. I've used trick U, of course. That gives you the pre-sheave structure. But the way to get from one of these sets to the next is to smash on the left with S1, smash on the right with K, and take the bonding map. Okay, so this is a suspension operator, effectively, but you're doing two things at once here. That's the key point. All right, now, K-spectrum object. And that's one spectra. Also has bigraded stable homotopy groups. I'm going to leave it to your imagination to see how to define these things, okay? I should say that the two variables here have special names. In all cases, you call S the degree and T the weight, because that's what they do in motivic stable homotopy theory. And this is where those bigraded homotopy groups in motivic stable homotopy theory come from. Okay, and another thing I'm going to leave to your imagination is that for such a bispectrum object, Y, when you take its diagonal S1 smash T spectrum and take the pre-sheaves in which it is stable homotopy groups I defined just there, that's the same thing and it's the pre-season motility of stable homotopy groups for Y itself, okay? And this is a cofinality area. Okay. And finally, if one of Y is one of these K spectrum objects in spectra, this is a map of spectra, so it's going to induce maps and stable homotopy groups. And let me write it this way. And describing maps in the homotopy category, stable homotopy category spectra here, and such a bonding map induces a map like I've just displayed. And what that's saying is that these guys, for K spectrum objects, are filtered colimits of stable homotopy groups, ordinary stable homotopy groups. And now the key point, in some sense, is that if you have a map of K spectrum objects, such that in each level you're seeing a stable equivalence. Then the induced map in S1 smash K spectra is a stable equivalence too. I don't care how you prove that, perhaps, but perhaps this is the most convenient way. And what that means is that anything good that you can say about S1 spectra is also true for S1 smash K spectra, okay? And, well, another thing is that a map of S1 smash K spectra is a stable equivalence if and only if it induces an isomorphism for all precedes of bigraded, all bigraded precedes of homotopy groups, okay? So you do get a way of measuring stable equivalences with precedes of homotopy groups in the setting. Remember, this is general. I'm talking about S1 smash K spectrum in a very general context, right? So anything I say here is true motivically, but it's also true on the underlying Misnewich site. Okay? And historically, we're only used to seeing this development in the motivic stable context. Pardon? No, you've asked me that before. Okay. So, we have our gadget T, we're working with T spectrum, we're saying that T is a suspension, topological suspension of an object K, which is compact up to equivalence. Okay, and we have all this development that I've just described. And so there's a list of outcomes from having a calculus of stable homotopy groups like this. Okay. And the first is that fiber sequences and cofiber sequences coincide. Okay, just like they do for ordinary spectrum, all right? Now, I'm running out of time. The way you prove this is to indent line exact sequences, at least for fiber sequences. So this is a strict fiber sequence. Of T spectrum. That's one slash K spectrum. Now you can take the associated bispectra. Okay? And you can replace the associated map of bispectrum by a strict fibration in every bilevel. Let me say it this way. It's a fibration in all bilevels. And this is a weak equivalence in all bilevels. You do this just like you would do it for the strict structure. This map P has a strict fiber. And it's a fact that when you take the diagonal of the strict fiber, because you've done everything strictly, that's strictly equivalent to the strict homotopy fiber that you started with. Okay, so you can replace this strict fiber sequence by a very strict fiber sequence, if you like, in the category of bispectra. So we've got this strict fiber sequence in bispectrum. Let me write it this way. That means that in all levels, I've changed notations here, okay? I've gone to bispectra rather than S1 slash K spectra. If you have a strict fiber sequence, it's P spectrum, K spectrum objects. In other words, it's bispectra. Then you're seeing a fiber sequence in all levels. Fiber sequence of spectra. Strict fiber sequence of spectra. Okay. And at the same time, this is also a strict fiber sequence of S1 spectra. This guy, in fact, all these guys have Lie-Zach sequences in pre-sheaves of stable homotopy groups associated to them. And the binding maps in the K-direction allow you to compare them. And what you get at the end of the day is a group, a collection of Lie-Zach sequences of pre-sheaves. One of those for every T. So Lie-Zach sequence in stable homotopy, in pre-sheaves of stable homotopy groups. There's one for each T. Notice that the degree changes and the weight does not in the Lie-Zach sequence. Okay? That's just always there. At the level of generality that I'm working, this isn't just a motivic thing, in other words. We're used to seeing this motivic homotopy theory. Motivic stable homotopy theory. I also said that fiber and co-fiber sequences coincide. Well, it's because it does your ordinary S1 spectra, and you argue with bispectra to see that. So that if A, this is a co-fiber sequence, level co-fiber sequence, you get a Lie-Zach, you can replace it by a level of fibration up to stable equivalence, diisomorphism to stable homotopy group. So of course, you get Lie-Zach sequences in pre-sheaves of stable homotopy groups. And that's the Lie-Zach sequence for a co-fiber sequence. Here's a corollary. This is somehow a basic thing about motivic cohomology when you get down to it. The expression of it, and where Vlasky introduced this, is pretty mysterious, but it just comes out of this co-fiber sequence. Because, of course, there's a co-fiber sequence involving Y. Y was suspended with a cone, which is the point, and the suspension of Y. People who work with motives like to say that this is an outcome of being in a triangulated category somehow, but it's a motivic stable homotopy theory fact. But it's not just that either, because, you know, I could be working in the underlying this neighbor's site, and I'd be seeing the same thing. And another corollary, if you like, again, it's very general. You have a wedge of two S1 smash case vectors that can be compared with a product of two S1 smash case spectra. And of course, that's a stable equivalence in S1 smash in S1 spectrum, right? And so this is a stable equivalence in S1 smash case spectra. So as long as your suspension operator involves actual suspension, you get additivity to the associated stable category. And I wanted to finish with this because these are the things that people actually use in calculations of one sort or another in motivic homotopy theory. I'm going to end there. It's time. Thank you. Thank you.